Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt Fazio, and good morning to you, and welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program over News Talk 1310 WBFD. Today's program is presented as a public service by DestinationDelco.com. From Philly to the Brandywine, that's DestinationDelco.com. And by Thomas Chevrolet, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. That's Thomas, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I'll return in a moment with today's guest, Dave Cubison, Director of Bedford County Emergency Services, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
DestinationDelco.com, a new way to experience Delaware County. From Philly to the Brandywine, we have the Crossroads, Riverside, Main Streets, Main Line, and the Brandywine. Five different ways to experience Delaware County. Check us out at DestinationDelco.com. Be sure to listen to Bedford County Speaks, brought to you by DestinationDelco.com. Saturdays at 8:30 a.m., just before Rush, on News Talk 1310 WBFD.
You've seen a lot of it on television, obviously, over the years, and maybe you've had a personal experience yourself of actually picking up the phone and having to call the 911 center for an emergency. And to some people, it's kind of a mystery. You know, how's it all work? Well, I have the fellow with us today who's going to tell us everything. His name is Dave Cubison, and he is the director of the Bedford County Emergency Services. Dave, getting over this cold, I feel like I'm in the need of emergency services, but I'll try to muddle through this the best I can. Thanks very much for joining us. It's really great to have you.
It's my pleasure to be here. And by the way, Lloyd, I do know CPR.
Good. The 911 center, the county, is very interesting to a lot of people. But before we get to that, I want to find out a little bit about you. Are you a native of Bedford County, or are you a foreigner?
No, I am not indigenous to this county. I actually hail from Butler County to the west of us. Grew up in Butler, born in 62, went to Butler High School. After high school, went to Slippery Rock University, where I had two majors. I was a recreation major, Parks and Rec, and that was interpretive services, the emphasis area. I was also a communication major, and the communications was broadcast.
Right.
So did quite a bit of radio and TV through college, and then my post-collegiate career started out in a small to mid-range market radio station. Did some stringing footage for the Pittsburgh market on video. It was video at that time,
right?
For TV, and then a couple of years later, went into a partnership with a number of other gentlemen. Opened up a video production company in Butler, and we did commercials, industrial video, just about anything that anybody wanted. Sometimes we kept the lights on by doing weddings. You know, like small companies will do what they have to do to keep things running, but my basic background in education was in interpretive services, thinking that I was going to head into the National Park Service as a naturalist ranger. And about two-thirds of the way through my college education, the Department of Interior did a hiring freeze, pretty much shut the doors on anybody coming in. So at that time, I just stayed a little bit longer and finished up my second
major.
That's
interesting. I thought you had to be a history major to be a park ranger, right?
History major actually helps.
Yeah.
If you have a specific area of history, the genre of history or the era of history that you're dealing with, right, if it correlates to the areas that you want to be. Also, a geology major, anthropology, things like that. It's really left up to the individual as to what they want to do, where they want to go. Because you get into the Department of Interior, for example, the National Parks System, just about everybody now is seasonal. You work 6 months somewhere, and then you either lay off and do something somewhere else, or you bid in on another national park.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. We recently interviewed the director of Shawnee Park.
Yes.
And she told us that even that park up at the Flood Museum up north of Johnstown is part-time most of the time because of the heavy seasonal kind of work. So it's so there's got to be a labor of love to come in and out of that like that.
So, I think so. And that was a portion of my education. The other educational aspect of my life was in communication with radio, TV production, pretty much most of the emphasis there. A little bit of journalism, a little bit of other that goes with that, but came out of it and really enjoyed it. Got involved in a couple of different levels with emergency services back in the 70s, and worked that into the different skill sets that I had, including the communication, and did some volunteer work for Butler County. Was their public information officer for a period of time after graduating Slippery Rock, and really enjoyed that. Worked when emergency management began in 1986. Prior to that, it was civil defense.
Right.
And there's still people that call it civil defense and all that. But so that pretty much was my my educational background, and really enjoyed it. But the other part that you ask about being a native for this area, no. But I moved here in 1992, and people who know me will probably laugh at this and say, really? But it took me a year, a full 12 months to slow down to the pace of life here in this region, which I really love, and which my wife Linda and our kids and I absolutely call this home. It took me about a year to slow down because of the hustle and bustle of, and Pittsburgh's not a huge, you know, it's not a metropolis.
Right.
It's not a Philadelphia or New York or, you know, or a Hyman. Hold on. The applause and laughter light just came on. I see it flashing over there.
The Hyman subway system, I know, has been
attacked
lately.
But, you know, when you think about it, it took me a year to really come to pace with life here. And ever since that, I've really loved it. And one of the greatest compliments I've received here from local folks, people that were born and raised here, they'll just like you did, they'll say to me, did you go to Bedford High School? Did you go to Everett High School? Did you go to NBC, Ridge? They'll ask me if I actually grew up here. And I look at that from a once an outsider's perspective, looking at that as a great compliment, because what that does is that says, oh, you don't stand out and you don't stick out. Hopefully you don't irritate us when you walk down the street. You more blend in with the people who are part of this community. We've been a part of this community since 92, and we love it. And so that's one of the greatest compliments I've received here.
Do you have children?
I do. Abigail and Noah.
That's great.
And they're both moving on at this point with their education and careers, and have really become involved in this area as well. My entire family, all four of us, I should say, excuse me, have participated on stage for the Bedford County Players. In fact, there's been a number of performances where all four of us were on stage at the same time. My wife and I have been cast a couple of different times as husband and wife in different plays. And
well, if you weren't at the Rebels in Rye lately, you would have missed Dave's sterling performance as Dr. Anderson. He was very good at that.
Dr. John Anderson. By the way, I loved the character of Dr. John Anderson.
We are speaking with Dave Cubison, who is the Director of Emergency Services here in Bedford. And Dave, thank you. I learned more about you in the last 5 minutes than I think I have since I met you a couple of years ago. I want to mention something, too. Excuse me. The notion of having a communications guy in the emergency management business is really good. For some time during my career before I stopped working, I was a consultant to the PICO Energy nuclear power plants. And I know nothing about nuclear power, but what I did provide was training, public relations and media training to the people at the plants. And that was a real issue with them because they had a lot of brilliant engineers who would say some really astonishing things to the public if you'd let them. And and when you're dealing in a nuclear power plant, you know, people think it's an atom bomb. They don't think it's a plant at all. They think they just steal the pictures of Hiroshima, and they think that's what it is.
Yeah.
And so we had a lot of fun doing that. And it was there were a few and far between that could do it, so they probably needed more people like you. Dave runs this whole place. In a lot of the larger emergency management operations, oftentimes the man who runs the 911 center is separate and apart from the person who runs the emergency management agency, but that's not the case here. Dave runs the whole thing. I want to begin a little bit, if you could give us a tutorial on how the whole 911 system works from the time we pick up our phone at home.
Well, Lloyd, let me say this first of all, that as it's been said in the past, no man is an island. And I am exactly a case of that. I am the director of the Department of Emergency Services. I oversee the 911 operations, which we call, as you well know, because of your background in emergency management and emergency services. It's called a PSAP, a Public Safety Answering Point. I oversee that, and I also oversee emergency management. They're actually two separate organizations that are brought together within one umbrella of the Department of Emergency Services. The quickest thing I could say is that, as I say, no man is an island. I have a wonderful staff. I have a staff of roughly 9 or 10 full-time employees. I have roughly 8 part-time or fill-in employees that do a phenomenal job. I have and when I say I have, I simply oversee a 911 coordinator who is Harry Corley, who has been on the job now just about 6 weeks.
Terrific guy.
Fantastic. And his predecessor, which just happens to have the same last name, Pam Corley, did a phenomenal job for years and years and years in that position and has brought us to the place that we are. You have a 911 coordinator, and the 911 coordinator here takes care of not only schedule but administrative tasks, personnel tasks, does a myriad of activities that keeps the hustle and bustle to a minimum for somebody like me, who then comes in, gathers information. As you can imagine, it's my responsibility to see the entire picture, to see the big picture, not only during emergencies, disasters, and even smaller calls, but to come into a center and be able to say, okay, you know, how are we doing on our budget? How are we doing on our planned programs? How are we doing on our projects? Harry then takes the information. It's very military, if you will.
Right.
You know, it's incident command,
right, sure.
Which was formed from the military. And there are steps and there are processes in place. There are formats that we follow. And I'll get to your actual question about when people call in just a second. But the staff that we have right now is, I believe, the best staff that we've had here and I'm in my 14th year at the department, but according to emergency services in the field, individuals in the community who have also echoed that, they said we have had currently the best staff that they've related to in memory. Now, no one should be afraid of 911. 911 and this is maybe one of the only parts of government that you can hear this statement, you know where I'm going, and believe it. And when you hear the statement, I'm from the government and I'm here to help, we really are. We're from the local government. We're brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, nephews, nieces, sons, daughters, and moms and dads, and cousins that are working for the betterment of this community. Our political subdivision is Bedford County. It's 1,016, I'm rounding it off, 1,016 square miles, you know, just around 49,000 people. And that's a lot of area.
It's always been interesting to me, too, that emergency management is, if not the only, one of the few government agencies that uses local volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
So that really changes the mix. When you say that you work with your brothers and sisters, you're literally talking about that. I know in the EMS service and fire service, many, many families work in these things over generations. So what you say is absolutely true. When we come back, we're going to learn more about how this whole thing works and learn a little bit about what happens when you do pick up the phone here at 911. And then at the end of the program, Dave is going to give you some really, really good tips on what to do at home to stay safe. I want to remind you today that the Bedford County Chamber of Commerce proudly supports and celebrates the business community of our Bedford County region. To learn more, visit them online at bedfordcountychamber.com. We'll be back with more at Bedford County Speaks in a moment.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. So often, when you want to buy a car or truck, you're told to make sure you get a good deal. So what is a good deal? Is it just the price of the vehicle, or is it something else? At Thomas Chevrolet, we think that a good deal means everything that's important to us. Things like our multi-generational reputation for honesty and integrity, or the free inspection service you get on your purchase after you roll out of here, or the fact that your car or truck has been checked thoroughly by our factory-trained service department to make sure it's safe, or that we are a family-owned dealership that feels a responsibility to our customers. That's what a good deal means to us. How about you? The next time you need a car or truck, visit Thomas Chevrolet Subaru first. We'll show you what a good deal really is.
Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, where buying a car or truck is always worry-free.
This is Trooper Jeff Petucci of the Pennsylvania State Police, and you're listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Now, let's head back to today's Bedford County Speaks.
Our guest this morning is Dave Cuppison, Director of the Bedford County Emergency Services. And Dave, you're so enthusiastic about this place, but I want to pull you a little bit back about how this whole system works. When I pick up the phone at home, my number actually appears on a screen, doesn't it?
Generally, yes. What happens is if you pick up your home phone and it's a hardline phone, what many people will refer to as a landline, that information will come electrically, actually, into our center, and it will get it'll get noticed by all the all the electrical equipment and electronics that we have. It'll be calibrated into a certain ringtone that tells us what trunk it's coming in. Is it a 911 call? Is it an administrative line call? My staff pick that up. They look on the screen on our computer-aided dispatch system, or what we call our CAD. It will bring up the name of the person who pays the bill, essentially. If there's four or five people that live in your home, it's not going to bring up everybody's name.
Right.
But whoever the phone is under, it'll bring up the address. It'll bring up the information that says what fire department, what medical service, what law enforcement should be responded to this. It'll give us the address. It'll also give us generally the municipality, what township or borough you're in. Also in the CAD, it will bring up a mapping layer that will show us exactly where you are on a map with roads, center lines, the whole bit. Most of the structures in the county are on this. It'll give us the shapes. On that form, that we'll be able to see what building you're in, the outbuildings, etc. We're going through, and I have to say this: we're replacing that system with an updated system this summer. So everything that I'm telling you now will actually improve exponentially.
Yeah, I want to expand on something here for a second, because I spoke with a 911 operator some years ago, and he told me something that was very interesting. He said a lot of people are on the phone, and the operator, your operator, is asking them questions, but actually the response has already begun.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have multiple staff on every shift here, and they are telecommunicators, what the title is. However, within that discipline, they have certain respects. The one function they have is a call taker. Another function they have is a dispatcher.
Gotcha.
They're telecommunicators, but if they're sitting in, for example, station number one, they're taking phone calls. Station number two then will be doing the dispatching. That's on a single call. And as they get that information, they're going to start asking you questions. Obviously, the very first thing they're going to say, in Bedford County at least, is 911, what is the address of your emergency? They're going to attain that. They're going to double check it on their records. If, for example, you call in with a cell phone, depending on when that cell phone was constructed, what service you have, from where this cell phone has come, we can get a portion of that information, or we can get none of that information. We may just get, the 814-977 and the last four digits.
So this is a critical question, because you could be living at that address, but the emergency may be somewhere else.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
And we ask about what is the emergency, what is the address of your emergency? And generally, many people will actually stop and they'll think about that, because they've now walked across the street or they've driven down the road, and it kind of jolts them.
Mm-hmm.
And my staff is poised to ask a good number of questions. But like you said, Lloyd, They're going to go down, for example, in a medical emergency. They're going to pull up our emergency medical dispatch protocols, which is a series of drop-down menus that if they ask you a question, you know, how old is the person, they type that in, then they ask the next question, you know, what's their chief complaint, what is it, what's going on, chest pains, right. They type that in, something else drops down, they ask a series of questions, and it leads them to the appropriate response, whether it's basic life support with just like EMTs, or whether it's going to be an advanced life support call that would necessitate paramedics.
Well, would the EMT and paramedic be getting that information along with the 911 center?
Eventually.
When they arrive at your house, will they know something when they get there?
Yeah. Yes. What will happen is, and that's all done mnemonically right now. It's all spoken
right.
Currently. What they'll do is the call taker will be talking to you on the phone, and at the same time, the other telecommunicator is on another set of wireless headsets
right.
listening in. As soon as they get the basic information and that incident is created, it shoots up on their screen and they begin to dispatch. It could be, usually, if you were sitting behind them in the call center, the phone would ring, my staff would answer 911, what is the address of your emergency, and within about 12 to 15 seconds into that call, you would start hearing tones going off for EMS, fire, or law enforcement. It's a very quick service. People don't realize that, but they need to know that these people, when we interview folks for these positions, multitasking under high stress conditions is one of the big things that we check for, and these folks go through six months of full-time training.
Can't have people getting rattled.
No, unlike myself behind this microphone. Yeah, you're absolutely correct.
Our guest is Dave Covison, and you're really getting the inside story here, and this is great for the Bedford County Emergency Services 911 Center. So the units have been dispatched.
Yes.
Your response time in Bedford County is actually very good, isn't it, because of the system?
Yeah, I believe that you have to look at it a couple of ways. Like I mentioned earlier, we have rounded off, we have 1,016 square miles. Mm. That is our political subdivision, our jurisdiction. There are fire companies and EMS stations that have hundreds of square miles for that one station, and when you think about that, how much of that is major highway? A little bit.
Yeah.
Most of it's secondary, tertiary roads. Mm-hmm. Big Bob's Belly Whopping Creek Run right. that we have to go down here, and boy, we better take a four-wheeler to get there to get Grandma out of the house. And we had a call like that just within the last day or two here, where there was somebody had to go back into the woods to retrieve people. So our folks here, these emergency responders in this county, take this job, this profession, even though many of them, like all the fire is volunteer, all the EMS for the most part is volunteer. There's a couple of services here that have 24/7 paramedics, mm-hmm. and a couple of them have crews on station. But nonetheless, these folks are professionals. They get out the door as quickly as they can. They respond as efficiently and professionally as they can, and they get the job done. The number one thing on the mind of any responder is life safety. And not only the patient or the person who they're going to, car accident, fire, whatever it happens to be, physical rescue, person hanging off a bridge,
right.
By their fingernails, is the safety of them, but also their own safety. So when people are going out the door, they're saying, let's get to that scene as fast as we can, but as safely as we can.
I think one of the great things about Bedford County, too, when I used to volunteer at a big city emergency management operation, one of the things that was a real problem was that the responders didn't know where things were because they were so huge, and oftentimes they were responders from somewhere else. You have a huge advantage here that the local fire companies know where Big Bob's is.
Yeah.
I tell you, there are parts of this state and this country where they literally have to give them directions either electronically over a screen inside the car or the truck, or verbally on the radio. Turn right here, turn left there, because they don't know where they are. And that slows things down.
One of the things that happens here in Bedford County, and I can speak from experience because I've been to our contiguous counties, the counties that surround us,
right.
We are one of the few counties that still give directions to the emergency responders. My staff, and boy, I've brought this up a couple of times about, well, you know, these men and women are all big boys and big girls. They can get there. But my staff wants to make sure so absolutely that they get to these places that they actually are giving them directions, sometimes whether they want them or not.
Or there might be a traffic condition or a bridge out they don't know about.
Any information. It's like a law enforcement, a police
right.
call. We get a call for somebody at a store. There's a disturbance, something of this nature. One of the very most important key facts that is found out is there a weapon? Mm-hmm. Well, my yeah. staff are going to ask those questions, and they're going to give whatever information they have to the officer, or if it's a medical call, they're going to give, within reason, virtually everything that was told to them, they're going to pass along. And the same with fire. We could have four or five fire companies coming in on a single call.
Let me give you your other hat for a minute. Before we get out of here, I want to make sure we cover this. There are essentially four different levels of emergency management. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, obviously your county EMA here, mm-hmm. and then the local EMCs. And this is really a planning function more than a response function. So what kind of advice can you give our listener to make it easier for them to be prepared in their own house
mm-hmm.
should something happen? And often, of course, what happens is, and when it happens to them, it's happening to a lot of people at the same time. So, you know, you can't get the kind of response you want during a big storm because everybody's getting the big storm. It isn't just one or two people. So you have to be out a little bit on your own there. So what would you say to people to make them a little more self-sufficient at home?
Well, I've got to say that the people in this region are incredibly self-reliant.
Yeah.
And in many cases, the state, Pima, is saying, are you opening up a shelter? Are you opening? In other counties, in other areas, have 6, 8, 10 shelters open, and we still, you know, we're thinking about opening
right.
one because of the people in this area. I've opened a shelter at times where I thought there'd be a need, and no one's shown up because people really do have a grasp on what they need to do. Because guess what? 4, 5, 6 inches of snow really doesn't faze us. Yeah, 3 feet does. I got to tell you that. Three feet does.
I heard a response once where we talked about shelters,
mm-hmm.
and it was a bad windstorm, and all the power was out, and they said, no, we're fine. We're in the spring house.
In the spring house, very nice.
See, so that's probably the kind of response you're getting around here. I mean, that's how people see themselves.
Well, I think, and to answer your question about what people can do, there's a number of things they can do. And almost everybody in this area now is, they're hooked in electronically.
Right.
They're hooked into the internet. You go online, whether it's PA.gov, whether it's American Red Cross, you know, .org, no matter what it is, and there are websites that have oodles and oodles of pages of information about fresh batteries, keeping your generator run every now and then, make sure it doesn't vent into the house,
mm-hmm.
never use alternative heating sources inside your home, never use a generator inside your home, things like that, keeping flashlights, blankets, at least 72 hours worth of non-perishable food and water, 1 gallon of water per day per person in your household, those kind of things. You can get pages upon pages of that information. And if anybody cannot find that, I actually have pamphlets here at the 911 Center that they could call 623-9117 and request them, and they can come pick them up actually next time they're in town.
Well, this, I could talk to you all day about this.
Oh, I think we should.
But we're out of time. But I want to really thank you so much for doing this. This has really been a treat. I've been wanting to do this for some time, and thank you very, very much for taking the time.
Well, thank you, Lloyd. I appreciate it. I appreciate it being you because of your background experience. And let me just leave the people of Bedford County by saying it is my promise and it is my whole heartfelt truth to say that this staff is going to do their best to protect the lives, the safety, and the property of people of Bedford County and our guests and visitors.
Well, from what I've seen, I think that's absolutely true. And again, Dave Covison, thank you. Bedford County Speaks, what's presented this morning by DestinationDelco.com. From Philly to the Brandywine, that's DestinationDelco.com. And by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru in Bedford, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I look forward to joining you next time right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, enjoy your weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday beginning at 8:30 to hear about the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Thanks for listening.